apocalypse.
I gotta get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and sparkle, Neely, sparkle.
I know what some of your big city no bra wearing hairy legged women livers might say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Maximum Film. It is episode 231, and it is your host, soon to be done, Ify Wadiway. How you doing? As always, I'm in the booth with my friends, so let me introduce you to them. First up, we have Christmas Zaddy himself, esteemed critic, book author as well. It's Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
I'll tell you, Ify, you know, I usually use this segment to talk about like really bad foods, you know, like that are delicious, but, you know, loaded with heaven knows what. So I'm going to try and, you know, restore a little balance to the universe in honor of today's film. I just had a Honeycrisp apple that was so good. I don't know if it's just because we're in the right season for it or I just got lucky with my grocery delivery, but Honeycrisp apples, do not sleep on those, you guys. They're really amazing.
Are Honeycrisp the ones they recommend you bake with?
Maybe. I don't know. You know, just like, don't waste my time with the Red Delicious. And no. Granny Smith is a good transporter of like crunchy peanut butter or Nutella or Biscoff spread. But, you know, if you just want straight up apple action, it's a Honeycrisp is what you want.
Ah. I've gotten big on Gala apples in the last year. Oh, yeah. I'll have to give a Honeycrisp a go.
I'm a Fuji boy myself. I like
Oh, Fujis are the best. That's actually the one I meant. F you, Gala. Long four letters.
Fuji is the way. And what is also the way is, you know, just always being in the good graces of none other than the Queen of the Midwest herself, Drea Clark, amazing producer, programmer, and all of the above. What's good?
Before I tell you what's good, Ify, when you introed the show, you were like, 2:31 and I'm almost done. Ify's not leaving.
I didn't want to bring it up on the air, but thank you for clarifying that.
I believe he means he's almost done with his Wednesday when we are recording
this. I mean, honestly, you never look for the reason in the rhyme because there's no rhyme. or reason, because I just am saying what rhymes with the number that I just said. I am still with the pod. I'm not going anywhere. It's all good.
What's good with me is so specific, yet so good. And that is, you know, when you start to wormhole on YouTube and then the algorithm's like, I got you. I have started watching, like, every day I'll watch like one or two. They're like 10 minute, and they are refurbishing videos, and typically of like vintage or like couture vintage items. So like I'll watch a professional like, oh, this is how I'm going to refinish this Birkin bag from 1948. And then we take out each individual stitch. And this is how we clean the leather. I watched them redo like a doll from the 60s. It is so specific and so satisfying. Because, you know, I love to throw things away. And I also love not having enough money to buy things like Birkin bags. So watching the other side of it, when you have nice enough items that should be repaired rather than junked, it's good stuff.
Beginning, middle, end. Because I'm sure they probably bring it out of some attic somewhere and it's got like moth holes and the seams are all coming out and the hem is frayed and then they just like.
And they're experts. There's something so delightful about just watching people who are good at their work.
Yes.
Especially if it's work you know nothing about.
All so much the better.
Which is, to be fair, most work for me. So, that's what's good with me.
Ooh, well, that's what I like to hear. Okay. Well, you know, not only do we have our amazing returning host, but we usually are joined by an esteemed, wonderful, illustrious guest. And today / tonight is no different. We have TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Angie Han. What's good? Woo-hoo!
Hello. Yeah. Well, what's good is me being here with all of you delightful people. I'm so happy to be here. But what I'm going to go with is the 10 pack of metallic jelly roll pens that I bought a few weeks ago. I used to be so into them. There was like a period of time in middle school when it was like very cool to have like very fancy gel pens. And I used to be so into them and I just forgot about them. Something reminded me the other day that one, they existed. And two, I'm now an adult who doesn't have to ask my mom for allowance to go buy them. So I treated myself to a 10-pack, and it has been a very sparkly, wonderful, beautiful time since then.
Oh, speaking of satisfying, the pen that you like and then having enough of them to like fill a coffee mug on your desk, that's just the best.
That's a good feeling. I know exactly the gel pens you're talking about. That's like a teleport time travel device, those. And also, that is more in my budget range. Like, I can't get a Birkin bag, but I could definitely afford my own gel pen back.
Go crazy. I do
like highly recommend. And like, it's one of those things, you know, sometimes you rediscover things from your childhood and then you're like, oh, this doesn't actually work as well as I thought. No, they write like a dream. They're everything that I hope for.
Are you dotting all your I's with hearts now?
No, but I should. And I should branch out into other shapes once I master the hearts.
Yeah, give it a go. Start signing all your letters. LYLAS.
There you go.
Love you like a sis.
Yes.
There's a stationery store in Highland Park called Shorthand, and I live in there.
Ooh.
Because, they just have a whole bunch of just like great one-off fancy pens and like your everyday driver pens. And the store is like sectioned off by color. So there's a whole black section, and these are like notebooks, journals, agendas, pens. There's orange, there's red, ooh, there's yellow, there's mint, and they have all of the same like selection of pens and notepads, but it's all by color. So if you're trying to like color coordinate your stationery, you can just go into the red section and go to town. It truly is a fun experience.
Iffy, the multitudes that you contain never fail to astound me, that they include you have a go-to stationery store.
Oh,
thank
yeah.
You.
Well,
thank
because
you,
between like stand up and like TV writing, I'm always taking notes. But then I also just am that type of person where it's like, oh, you can't expect me to have one because I'm just leave it at home. So I'm going to have just some everywhere. Like at this time, I have two right next to me. This one's like my journal. And this one is just one that I write dumb bullshit in. And then to my right is like my quick notes section where I have this little tiny guy, which has kind of been my usual for like notes offhand and little rhymes and what have you.
I'm psyched for when your daughter's old enough that those turn from charming detritus around your home to like compromat. What's it called when the Russians have
exactly blackmail material? Compromat.
Oh, compromat. Oh, I know. Yeah. I mean, especially I have a pentagram of boobs I made for some reason. So that's
for
yeah.
For some reason.
At, yeah, that definitely is like a bored doodle.
As you do.
Is anything good with you beyond
the pentagram of
boob doodles?
Well, the one I was obviously going to come on was, you know, my episode of Grand Crew aired this week.
Mazel tov.
Thank you so much. It was unintentionally like timely because it was the first day of Black History Month. And it just so happened to be the episode where we talk about like coping with like Black grief. And then it has normally we have a cold open, but this one was just a poetry by this Chicago poet, Jay Ivey, who crushed it. And then Matthew A. Cherry directed my episode, which was a dream because if you've been listening to this pod since I've been on, you know how much I loved Hair Love.
Did you fangirl on him about Hair Love?
Of course I did. I said. I should have brought my book that I have read to my daughter. But yeah, he's great. So it was just like a total good, all good stuff. But my secondary what's good that Drea reminded me of is, you know, I have a few cookbooks, but I don't really use it. Usually, you know, we're in the age of the internet. So I am like taking recipes offline and downloading. So I finally caved and bought a cookbook binder where you keep all your printed out recipes so that you can reference them later. So now I have that and I feel even more fancy. Like,
look at you. So domestic.
Yeah. You know,
I wish you had one of those grandma boxes though. And
I have my mom's old
cards.
Accordion file.
Yeah.
Those are a hot commodity. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, move over. There's a new barefoot Contessa. The barefoot Contesso.
Yes. It's for sure Contesso and not like Count or whatever.
Okay. Well, today on the show, we're going to open up a portal to the Marvel Cinematic Universe and visit that kooky club of immortal beings called the Eternals. Plus, it's that time of year again. We're talking Sundance 2022, and we'll find out all the shocking results of last week's Denzel-themed Hall of Excellence poll. Just kidding. It was no contest. You know, I'm glad the people have sided with the champ. And of course, we're going to top it all off with some staff picks. But first, it's time for Itadic, where we look at this week's movie news and ask ourselves, is this important? Do I care? And man, am I excited to kick things off by talking about Jason Momoa joining the Fast family. I am real excited because I got takes, but let me just get through the Itadic and then we'll talk about it. So the news is that Momoa is in final negotiations to join Vin Diesel, Tyrese Gibson, Ludacris, Michelle Rodriguez, Sung Kang, and all those Fast and Furious family members for Fast and Furious 10, allegedly. The final installment. His role has not been announced, but it looks like he'll probably follow in the footsteps of Charlize Theron as Fast and Furious's baddie. Is this important? Do you care?
Well, obviously we love all things Fast and Furious here. What I care about most, and I expressed this to you guys separately, I am fastly furious that I did not guess that they would go after Jason Momoa, especially when The Rock was like, that guy insulted me and my family. I bite my thumb at you, sir. Momoa is a no-brainer for this.
Yeah, how is he not already in this franchise is the question, right?
That's how they know he's perfect casting, because as soon as I heard it for a second, I was like, oh, I thought he was already in those movies. And then, no, he wasn't. They mostly pick bald people and he's very not bald. So I assume that's the only thing that has held him back from being in it so far.
But he's always dressed for the job he wanted, you know.
Yeah, he's always looked like a member of the Fast family. But what I must say is I feel like we're playing some 4D chess here. I think that there is a specific reason Momoa was cast. And, you know, I think this is like this could very well be some true silliness going on with it.
You think he's going to be like, didn't we meet that The Rock's character has like an entire island?
Yes,
of family
exactly.
The island of family, right? Defending from like helicopter cars or whatever.
I don't think this is, but if I were doing like the Hail Mary bingo card, I'm saying recasting Hobbs as Momoa would be my wild Hail Mary guess. And if Vin Diesel is as petty as we believe he is, and we all know he is. We've seen the post.
But here's the thing. Dwayne Johnson would come back to do like Hobbs and Shaw 2 or anything else that didn't involve Vin Diesel. So I don't think they're going to do that.
Exactly.
But
But he likes money. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Let's not forget, though, like John Cena surfaces in number 9 as the never before mentioned Toretto. So even though we met the whole island of hunky dudes in Hobbs and Shaw, I would not be surprised if Jason Momoa winds up being the Hobbs we never heard about.
You know what I think would be the cattiest thing to do to the Hobbs character? He makes him his son. If Jason Momoa was there as like Hobbs Jr. Old man.
Lil Hobbs.
Or there's going to be an off-screen phone call where he's like, yeah, no, I wasn't there to protect our family. I had to do better things. Yes, I know I'm the stronger Hobbs brother. Yes. All right.
Sorry about your hair, brother.
Yeah. Oh, I cannot wait. Please let us see this.
I will tell Dominic he is better than you in all ways.
Yes.
Consider that message shared.
Oh, yeah. Love it.
Moving on. So, Nightmare Alley. The Guillermo del Toro film. It is now streaming on HBO Max and on Hulu, but it also expanded to 1,100 screens after 5 weeks in theaters, but not because it's a raging box office success. Quite the contrary. Most of those screens are showing a new version of the movie in black and white. Del Toro says he and cinematographer Dan Lauston lit the noir film as if it were going to be shot in black and white in homage to the original 1947 version of the film, starring Tyrone Power. And so now audiences can see this black and white version in theaters around the country. Is this important? Do you care?
Well, this, can I tell you immediately what this brought to mind, which neither answers if it's important or my level of care, but something I'm going to share anyway. My first thought was when they did Mad Max Black and Chrome,
right,
and released it, which I was so excited Fury about, Road, and the yeah. idea of Fury Road, Black and Chrome. And I loved that movie and was like, oh, I can't wait to see that because I loved it. And oh, how does this change the visuals and whatever? And I decided to go watch it. I always go and watch a movie on election night because I get too tense. And I watched it on election night of 2016. Oof. So that movie was ruined for me. And as my dreams and heart was crushed forever. So I'm like, yo, Nightmare Alley, what are you going to ruin? When are you going to come out? And it's going to be at the same time as Bad News, black and white version.
I will say I have a better experience of something similar, which is I went to go see Parasite in black and white, which Bong Joon-ho and his cinematographer said, you know, was very much a thing they had been talking about and were going to try and do at one point. And then once the film took off, they decided they could create this version and they really like went over it and made sure that it was the kind of monochrome they wanted it to be. And I thought it was amazing. And it was like seeing it in a whole different way in terms of there's something about black and white where it's reality, but it isn't. I think in the case of something like Nightmare Alley, where it's set in the past and it's based on it's a remake of a movie that was in black and white in the first place, then that adds a whole layer of, like, you know, making it seem like it came from the period in which it's set. But in a movie like Fury Road or Parasite, I think it just sort of allows for a different way to kind of look at it. The crazy thing is, I did not like Guillermo del Toro's Nightmare Alley, and maybe we'll talk about it soon. I don't think it works, but I would totally go, if I were going to theaters right now, I would totally go see it in black and white because it looks stunning even in color. And I think it would be really cool to see how they do, like, all the seamy carnival and the Art Deco therapist's office and all that stuff in black and white. I think that would be awesome to look at. I suspect the problems I have with the movie would still be there, but I like that this is happening and I would like more filmmakers to do this with their films.
I just rewatched the first one. I'm doing a deep dive in noirs right now, so mm-hmm. I've watched about 50 in the last
one. Oh, the original's great.
Yeah, it's fantastic. There are not a lot of directors that I trust when they say, oh, I lit something to be shot at this way in the first place. Guillermo del Toro has an impeccable eye for visuals. So there is something there. If you're gonna take something away just from the technique of filmmaking, there are worse directors to trust.
Yeah, he's the one.
Exactly.
All right, well, on that note, I think we're going to take a break. But when we come back, we're going to be talking about the Eternals.
That was your Eternals voice?
Yeah, my Eternals yeah. woman.
Okay, everybody, this past year has taught us to savor every moment together. Hell, savor every moment by yourself as well. Spend less time prepping and cooking, more time with the people you love, including if that person is yourself. You can do this with the help of DoorDash.
DoorDash makes it all happen. Along with the restaurants you love, you can now get groceries and other essential items delivered with DoorDash. Get drinks, snacks, and other household items in less than an hour. Craving late night ice cream? Forget that one key ingredient for dinner. Maybe you just want to stock up the pantry for the week. With DoorDash, get everything in one single app. Ordering is easy, and your items will be left safely outside your door when you choose contactless delivery drop-off.
Yeah, for a limited time, our listeners can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code MAXFILM. That's 25% off up to a $10 value and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code MAXFILM. Don't forget, that's code MAXFILM for 25% off of your first order with DoorDash. Subject to change, terms apply.
So you've probably heard about microdosing. If you search around a bit on the internet, you'll find all sorts of people are microdosing to feel healthier and perform better.
Yes, yes. I mean, look, sometimes, you know, people are trying to, you know, party, and sometimes you're just trying to feel good while you just go through a workday, writing, or maybe watching your favorite anime. Well, look, I must say microdose helps you with that. It allows you to just kind of do the things that you planned on doing, but just, you know, taking it easy on your body. Nothing too crazy, nothing too flashy. You're just having a good time.
Our show today is sponsored by Microdose Gummies. Microdose Gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. Microdose is available nationwide, and to learn more about microdosing THC, just do a quick search online or go to microdosegummies.com. Use code MAXFILM to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show description, but again, that is microdosegummies.com and code MAXFILM.
Ooh. Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiway. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Angie Han,
Alonso Duralde.
And last year, Academy Award-winning director Chloe Zhao entered the MCU game with the movie we're talking about today, Eternals.
We're Eternals. We came here 7,000 years ago to protect humans from the Deviants.
It came out in U.S. theaters back in November, and now it's available to stream on Disney+. The movie introduces us to an entire team of new heroes, the Eternals, the bad guys, the Deviants, and some new gods? Plus, the Eternals have to decide whether or not they're going to save the world and how. It's a lot of movies, so with that, Alonzo, would you mind giving us a brief synopsis of the Eternals?
No such thing as a brief synopsis of the Eternals, but I'll do what I can. Okay, so there's a god, but not really god. It's a celestial, and he's named Arishem, and he creates planets, and he also has created the Eternals, and there's 10 of them, and they are on Earth from the dawn of time to fight back the Deviants, who are bad people, and they do this over the centuries, and then sometime in the mid-16th century, it seems like they're all done, and the Deviants are gone, and they all just sort of stay on Earth and hang out, but they go their separate ways and live on different continents, and they lose touch. You know how you do. And then the Deviants start coming back, and they show up in London, and so suddenly now they've got to fight them again. And then as they get deeper embroiled into this thing, they all learn things they didn't know before about where they come from and why they were created and what their real agenda is. And now they're like, well, do we even do this now? And so this is a Marvel movie that introduces you to 10 new superheroes and a philosophical dilemma, and it does it all in 2.5 hours, and maybe or maybe not that was a good idea, but nonetheless there's a lot happening here and a lot of people and a lot of big cosmic battles, and it's Eternals.
Yes, I love ending things on the spelling bee.
Yes,
yeah, yeah,
exactly. Eternals. Yeah. Can I say, this is, you know, we've covered many, if not all, of the Marvel movies. And this is the one, you guys know I love to not watch trailers. And in the before times when I was going to the cinema multiple times a week, there was no avoiding them because they just air before things. This was the first Marvel movie that I went into straight up blind.
Oh, wow.
Because we did not know the characters from previous ones. You get a couple like pop up, you get a fantastic kind of cameo from Wong from Doctor Strange, but they're, like Alonzo said, you're being introduced to all these new people, and I did not know who I was going to see. I didn't know if it was going to be on Earth. I didn't know anything. And it was so exciting to me to see a big ass blockbuster where I knew nothing. How in the know were you all?
I'm a trailer avoider also. I mean, like, even in movie theaters, I'm known to, like, close my eyes and hum. But yeah, I didn't really know much going in, and I didn't know these characters from the comics. Like, I love and admire Jack Kirby, but when he gets real cosmic, that's just, like, not my jam. So I had never encountered any of these characters before. And so it was... You know, I was just like, okay, this movie just throws a lot of dates at you and people, and they've all got powers, and they're all played by, you know, people, actors you've never seen before, actors you know real well. I felt like I was kind of dog paddling to keep up with this movie because it was throwing so much at me. But yeah, I definitely did not quite grasp what I was in for this.
Yeah. So I'm gonna tell you exactly what I told Molly last night when we were going and stuff started being weird and I had to turn to
her. I'm assuming you mean during the movie.
During the
movie. You haven't just derailed.
Thank you for clarifying.
Story. Okay. Yeah. Just checking.
Well, you know, the way to look at, you know, the body of Marvel works is you have your street level heroes who are your Luke Cages, your Jessica Jones, Daredevil, sometimes Spider-Man. Then you have your global level heroes like the Avengers and so on and so forth. And now what we're tapping into is cosmic Marvel is what they would call it. Mm-hmm. And this is actually the world that Guardians existed in. And with Guardians, they kind of scratched the surface level of it. It's cosmic Marvel gets weird. And yeah. and the deep, the comic book nerds who love it are definitely the weirdos of comic book nerds. Like, it is very much a niche within this community, cosmic Marvel. So I already knew that by tapping into the Eternals, we were already going to be into some weird stuff. But there was the Herculean task given to Chloe Zhao of not only introducing, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 heroes, but then also while introducing them, explaining where they've been all this time, because any hero introduced has to now in their movie answer the question, yo, where were you when Thanos was popping off? Like, you know, right. We ain't seen you. And now
I feel like you guys could have handled that.
Yeah. 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 Much in the same way that Coogler had to answer, where was Wakanda during slavery? Every hero has to answer, where were you during all this? And I think, you know, with what they had, they answered it pretty well, but it's also like kind of hard to introduce 10 characters and make you care about all of them and still sneaking in a allusion to a new hero and sliding in another hero's introduction in the post-credit screen. So I say all that to say I came in not knowing much and I left still kind of not knowing much.
I mean, it feels like such a big movie on every level. Like, not only does it have so many characters and they're doing so much and they covered literally thousands of years in this movie, which is wild. But I want to go back to what Ify was saying about how, like, there's like these street level heroes, you got like your Hawkeyes or whatever, or like the Daredevils, like they just kind of beat up bad guys in like their one square mile of Hell's Kitchen. And then this one just zooms out to such an epic scale where it's not even like Guardians where they're just like floating around planets. It's just like, no, this is about the concept of superheroes and like the birth of all life and whatnot. It's kind of wild. I think as you guys have pointed out, it's a huge task. I don't know that it works for everyone, but I liked it. I don't think it's completely successful in everything it does, but I admire that it swings for the fences a little bit more than I feel like a lot of Marvel movies for do. Sure. And actually in that way, it really reminded me strangely of a DC movie. It still feels like a Marvel movie, but it feels like Marvel's most DC-ish movie, if that makes any sense.
Yes, 100% it does. Because while you were saying that, it really made me go, I mean, this is the movie that like Snyder would have wanted to do, right? Mm-hmm. In his obsession of creating gods among men in his hero. Yeah. And that's essentially what this was. The premise of this movie is essentially the Watchmen. What happens when you have these essentially gods among humans, but they're still human? And they still have their feelings and different philosophies on how they should be around this group of people. And then after tackling that pretty heavy premise, they pull the rug under and introduce a new level to what does that philosophy mean when everything you've thought you've existed for is a lie. So it is like a very like heady movie, but I was really excited to see how it navigated all of it. And I'm curious to see what everyone thought, because like I feel like I enter a lot of superhero movies. I mean, I enter a lot of movies in general with a huge kind of like, if there's a suspension of disbelief, I'll just go to the bottom of the pit and be like, I'm ready, and I'm ready to accept you as you are. Give me the messy pot of gumbo and I'm gonna just slurp it up.
I like that in a suspension of disbelief you went low.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think I'm supposed to be suspended, but I'm in this pit. But it's a yeah, good yeah. thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree with what Angie was saying in terms of that this, the swinging for the fences element of this definitely worked for me, because I would so much rather see any movie, but particularly a superhero movie that is addressing philosophical concerns in ways that I found both unique but also actually thoughtful. Like, I do think a lot of Snyder stuff tries to take on, like, I mean, the Messiah stuff of Superman is just relentless and over the head, but I think it lacks nuance, and I think it lacks a knowledge of what it's actually trying to do. With Chloe Zhao's vision, I got a sense of where she stood as an artist with presenting the questions that we're getting, of presenting those ideas of, because they're also, they're warriors, they're people, they're mercenaries. They've been tasked with this assignment. They're told to follow it unquestioningly for eons. I don't know how long an eon is, but I assume a few of them passed. Like, you know, we're seeing them throughout all of human history. And they're also told, in what I found one of the most interesting characters, Barry Keoghan, whom I love and think is such an interesting actor anyway, his character I found great. His superpower is that he can mind control people, and that they sit and they watch all of these humans battling century after century over dumb shit. And he's like, I could stop this.
Their weapons have become too deadly. Maybe it wasn't such a good idea helping them advance, Faustus.
Technology is a part of their evolutionary process, Druid. It's not exactly something that I can stop.
No, you can't, but I can.
It is maybe unwieldy at times, because there's juggling, like, oh, we're going to do an origin story of all of these different people. But also, we have all of these big, heady thoughts. And I still thought it shook out in the watch. And I had a really fun time while getting through it, which is probably most important.
I definitely was enjoying it as I was watching it, but by the end of it I kept thinking, what if this had been like a 10 episode series on Disney Plus, and we could really like spend some quality time with each character and get understand who they are and what they're about, and thread through these more complicated sort of philosophical issues. I mean, I do love the fact that we've reached this point in the superhero movies where they're finally starting to ask those kind of questions. It comes up in Spider-Man No Way Home, you know, this notion of like, well, what if, rather than just beating the crap out of everybody, we like try to reform them? What if there's a way to, like, you know, cure these megalomaniacs from wanting to take over the world or destroy humanity or whatever, and actually like reform them and turn them back into, you know, the productive scientists that they were to begin with? And so I like that Zhao is going after these bigger notions of like, well, what is the right thing in this situation, and says who, and who benefits and who loses. And, you know, I can't imagine what another filmmaker, like, I can't imagine what like the Russo brothers would have done with this. You know, you needed somebody, I think, like Chloe Zhao to really come in and like put a little art house zhuzh on it. But that said, I just think that she has been given a lot of sausage and a limited amount of casing. And so, you know, there's just so much in this movie that we can't, you want to like, I wanted so much more Brian Tyree Henry. I wanted oh, yeah. so much more about his like crazy inventions and like all the sort of technological advancements that he's not allowed to give people. I wanted more of Angelina Jolie's PTSD, because that's certainly something we haven't seen explored a lot in these movies. I wanted more of Kumail Nanjiani's, you know, Bollywood career. All that stuff was giving me these great tastes of it, but I just felt like there's just too much for any movie to handle with any filmmaker trying to make a 150-minute movie with all of this, all of these characters and all this material.
I want you to know, yeah, I started laughing when you said the Russo brothers, because in my head I thought of the Safdie brothers.
Oh.
And I was like, oh my God, the Safdie brothers version of Eternals.
That I would totally love to see.
Wild ride.
I mean, yeah, especially with the stakes in this movie, we would have all had heart attacks.
It would have been, I would have chewed all of my fingernails off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You nailed it, Alonzo, because one of the things about halfway through the movie is where I thought, this would have been the perfect time for them to have a Disney Plus Marvel show lead up to a movie. Because I think they, you know, at first in the early stages, and, you know, we all know that Feige works in phases. And I think with the first phase, they weren't sure how the Disney Plus shows were going to go. They weren't sure how tapped in. We have now seen that Marvel fans are plugged in to the shows and the movies. And, you know, most of the movies will give you enough, you know, in the first act that if you didn't, you know where it's at. And I would have loved to do, yeah, a 10 episode series of, you know, just where they're at. And then the second act of the movie is now the first act, and we can really stretch it out and explore how it's all affected. Because I think you're right. The first act was just like, exposition. And you're right. And it wasn't like a bad thing. It was just like, wait, I want to see more of that. It was like, when you go to a fancy restaurant with your friends, specifically in New York, because they don't know how to price food. And you get, we're like, let's order for the table, and you order a bunch of delicious food, but they are barely half a serving, and y'all are all trying to make it stretch.
Small
and
plates.
The food is amazing. The food is phenomenal, but you already know you spent almost $1,000 on what you have already, so you wouldn't dare order more. So y'all make the best of it and just get drunk.
A shockingly specific yet relevant iffy.
Yeah, did you go out to dinner with friends in New York recently or something? Yeah.
Okay, I have a question for you guys. What did you think of the central love story of Gemma Chan and Richard Madden's characters, who are two of the Eternals who have been there? They're together for centuries, and then he's departed. And then, but like, that love story is meant to be what we come around on, right? Like, that's what shapes our, not to give away parts of the ending, but that is what shapes the ultimate sort of showdown that comes about.
I thought that it was probably, there's a few different romantic or romantic-ish storylines in this one. And I thought that the one that they decided to hang the whole movie on is actually the one that I was like the least into. I didn't think that they had incredible chemistry, although it kind of, it, once you see like where that story goes, it kind of like some of the problems I had in the beginning, I was like, oh, okay, in retrospect, I guess it makes sense. And maybe they were doing it on purpose, but it just felt kind of chilly. I mean, there's also little romantic subplots with Brian Tyree Henry's character is married to a human person. I thought that Gemma Chan even had better chemistry with Kit Harington. Barry Keoghan and Lauren Ridloff's characters have this really cute little flirtation going on. So do Angelina Jolie and Don Lee's characters, Athena and Gilgamesh. I thought theirs was the one that I thought had the most like kind of romantic epic suite that I felt like was
right?
Missing a bit from the Gemma Chan and Richard. Sorry, I should use their character name, Cersei and Icarus one. So, I mean, if you had hung it on that, I think I might've bought it a little bit more, but I mean, enough of it worked that I didn't spend the whole movie being like, no, absolutely not. But
no, yeah. I wasn't against it, but I totally agree with you. I originally saw this at the drive-in because I'm not going to theaters and I'd wanted to see it. And then when I rewatched it for this, knowing where it ends up and like what maybe is fueling how he's treating her, I'm like, oh, okay, that actually plays out better. But I agree. I'm torn because like Angelina Jolie's character has such a fascinating relationship with Don Lee.
Thank you.
For what?
For always taking care of me.
Oh. I'll do it again. On any planet.
I appreciated that it wasn't just romantic because it was so much more complex. I mean, they're gods, basically. And like, they've been around forever. They're warriors together. They've been through it. And I was like, because if everyone had been coupled off, that would have annoyed me greatly. But it's also the thing of, why can't Don Lee date Angelina Jolie? Like, what? Do you know what I mean? The like give and take of that.
Well, there is kind of a caretaker aspect to that relationship as well, mm-hmm. you know? So I think that might, in a romantic sense, sort of muddy the water a bit. Right. I don't know. But you're right. They are, I think, the most dynamic couple. Although, again, I would have loved to see more of Brian Tyree Henry and Haz Slimane as Marvel's first superhero gay couple, you know, or at least half superhero. My other big question is, like, Sprite is presented as an eternal 14-year-old. And I understand that, like, in terms of her physical self. But she's millennia old and she's still acting like a teenager. Like, we just watched Interview with a Vampire. Like, Kirsten yes. Dunst at some point is an old lady in a little kid body, but yes. somehow Sprite still acts like she's 14. I'm like, that's, and that becomes part of the plot. And I'm like, why would that be the case after all this time?
That is such a good
point. I don't know
point.
If this is why, but at one point they're like, oh, the thing about Eternals is they can never evolve. So like, these people are just kind of stuck as where they were in the beginning. So I don't know if that's why, just like, look, we cast a 14-year-old. She's going to act like a 14-year-old.
Well, that's what's so interesting, because I caught that too, Angie, and it was one of those things where it seemed like it almost kind of negates itself, because for like one, I feel like all of them evolved because they eventually learned to love humans, because if they didn't evolve, then they should have worked as intended. But then you also have like, yeah, she was acting like a 14-year-old, but at the same time was able to acknowledge that she was unable to develop these relationships that she's seen over the millennia, and that she's always treated like a child. And that was like an interesting story. But yeah, I did kind of clock, because it seemed like there was something to her with the guy at the bar kind of flirting as an older woman, and then like he touches her hand and can't touch her, and then she runs away.
I think they did that to establish very quickly if the youngest character's superpower is she can look like whatever she wants or whatever, then why wouldn't she just look older? Because they would have gone through some like darkly pervy assumptions of what her character was up to. Can I give a shout out to Kit Harington, whom I love and I thought was very charming in this, but I also tied in with that, thank you, Chloe Zhao, for letting Kit Harington be short. Thank you for letting him be his own height. There are several shots of him and Gemma Chan like nuzzling or close after a date, and they're just standing on solid ground. You get them from across the street. There's no apple boxes. He's just a little under her gaze. He's still a righteous babe. They didn't try anything. The joy that gave me, I can't even tell you.
I had the same thought after Spider-Man, where Zendaya is like usually a little bit taller than Tom Holland.
Yes, bless, and they just let them. Ah, oh, good stuff. Well, I think I've ended on a really significant point.
Clearly, I think so. I think at that point, you know, we gotta go to give our reviews.
For me, Eternals would be a screen it. I know that Ingu Kang is out there annoyed that I said that, because she keeps being mad that I like everything that we talk about, but she can eat it. You hear me, Ingu? And I really enjoyed this. I enjoyed the wonderful conversation I had after this. And I loved seeing how a director like Chloe Zhao approaches this material and approaches the shooting. We've seen so many Marvel movies where they have to save the Earth, and we sometimes get an idea of like humanity needing it. This is the first time I saw Earth looking beautiful. I saw different scenic backdrops, different parts of the globe, and they looked stunning. And it was like, oh, this planet's kind of incredible. So good for her. Good job, Chloe. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a screen it as well. I mean, this is not a perfect movie, but if a film leaves me wanting more of it, give me that over a film that makes me want much less of it, you know? So my whole thing with it is like, I'm liking everything I'm seeing. I just wish I were seeing more of it. And I wish it were presented in a way that could happen in terms of either a really long ass movie or a TV series or whatever it was they went up doing. But given the restrictions based on all the things that had to be done here, I think Chloe Zhao made as successful a film as anybody could have with all of these hurdles to deal with. And I think really takes the MCU into a more thoughtful place. And I'll be curious to see how those ideas from this film reverberate into other films. And of course, also, I just want to see, you know, Angelina Jolie talk to a talking raccoon.
Or what do you think, Angie?
I'm going to go screen it. If you're someone who's just like, you know, I'm just tired of all this Marvel stuff, I'll like, maybe this isn't for you. But I personally thought that, I think kind of as Alonso said, within the confines of the MCU, it's doing something that I thought was more interesting than the other ones. And also, I'm not going to watch it on a big screen anytime soon. As far as I'm aware, that's not even possible. But it is one that, like, I've seen it at home twice, and I really do wish I could have seen it on a big screen, because it is very, not only is it very beautiful, but the kind of epic grand scale, I thought was one of the things that I found the most interesting about it, which is why, actually, you guys are talking about how you wish it was a Disney Plus series, and in my head, I was like, I don't know about that. I like the idea of this being kind of enormous.
True. No, so, it does loan itself to the big screen. I hope I get to see it that way. And I will also throw out real quick, if you are somebody who has not been slavishly keeping up with all of the Marvel movies, you can hop into this one. And there's not going to be a quiz about 10 other movies that you haven't seen. Like, it's fairly discreet ETE in a way that other ones aren't.
It's a good point. Edge of my seat, yeah. Iffy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, this is no brainer. This is definitely a screen it for me. It's you know, I know some people who are going to just watch this arms crossed and be like, oh, I'm not into it. This is definitely, I like this new fresh direction that we're going in. I would love to see the cosmics kind of lean into being the weird, heady Marvel films. I want there to just be layers. If we're going to have this superhero takeover, then I'm going to need some variety. Let's get a bigger plate next time. You know what I'm saying? But
no more tapas.
Yeah, no more tapas. We're done with tapas. I need the main course. But we'll be right back after you from another show for maximum fun. So stick around.
Hi, I'm Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
And I'm Jordan Morris, boy detective.
Our comedy podcast, Jordan Jesse Go, just celebrated its 15th anniversary.
It was a couple months ago, but we forgot.
Completely. Our silly show is 15 years old. That makes it old enough to get its learner's permit.
And almost old enough to get the talk.
Wow, I hope you got the talk before then. A lot of things have changed in 15 years. Our show's not one of them.
We're never changing, and you can't make us.
Jordan, Jesse, Go, the same forever at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Prepare yourself for the greatest pro wrestling podcast spectacular known as Tights and Fights. A back-dropping audio showcase that helps you understand the world of pro wrestling with a lot of love and no toxic masculinity. Featuring host Danielle Radford.
Time to kick butt and chew gum, and I'm all out of butts.
Lindsay Cal.
I'm a brutal Brit, and my fists were made to punch and hit.
And Hal Lublin.
I was doing the voiceover this whole time.
Hear us talk about pro wrestling's greatest triumphs and failures.
And make fun of its weekly absurdities.
On the Perfect Wrestling Podcast.
Tights and Fights. Every Saturday, Saturday, Saturday on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Evie Wadiway. In the studio with me are
Alonso Duralde.
Angie Hahn.
Drea Clark.
In just a moment, we're going to get into this year's Sundance experience, but first we have an update on last week's Hall of Excellence Battle Royale. The category was Most Badass Denzel Performance. And Marissa,
feel free to reveal the results.
Sure. I know we're all anxious to find out what happened here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So listeners voted on Facebook. Thank you for voting, listeners. So in third place, we had Drea's pick.
Really? You got to say second and third, too? You can't just say which
second,
one won.
Second runner up.
I do. Okay. No. That's nice. I like that.
If the other two performances are unable to fulfill their duties.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Drea. That's how we're thinking of this. Mm-hmm. So second runner up, I'm handing you a slightly smaller trophy, Drea's pick, Private Trip from Glory. First runner-up in the medium-sized trophy, Alonzo's pick, Easy Rollins from Devil in a Blue Dress. And over half the vote, I do have to say, goes to the winner, biggest trophy, imaginary trophy I'm holding between my two hands.
Like the kind they give out at like kitty beauty pageants, those, you know, those eight-footers.
Yes, yes. That goes to Iffy's pick, which was, of course, Malcolm X from Spike Lee's Malcolm X. Do you guys want to hear some listener additional comments?
Oh, by all means.
Yeah.
All right. So we got an email from Mstro3000, who voted for Easy Rollins, but they added, I want to shed a spotlight on the first Denzel I ever saw, The Mighty Quinn, a Jamaican joint. Also, The Book of Eli is my guilty Denzel pleasure.
Ooh.
Over on Facebook, someone named Todd also put in a good word for The Mighty Quinn. So I don't know if you guys have seen that one. It was new to me.
I haven't.
I know of it, but I've never seen it.
And Dark Secret suggested that Creasy from Man on Fire as most badass Denzel pick. But I want to say thank you to everyone who voted. Hello and welcome to all the new Facebook group members.
Hooray.
Hey.
And of course, above all, congratulations to Denzel Washington as Malcolm X from Malcolm X for your ascension to the Hall of Excellence as Denzel's most badass performance.
Denzel is going to be so thrilled to hear that he, in fact, out of a Denzel-only category,
even congratulating specifically Denzel Washington as Malcolm X.
If he hadn't won, I think it would have been a real shocker for him. But, you know, he'll be doubly thrilled that he gets to stand next to Gary Oldman's wig from Dracula.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. It's quite a haul, this Hall of Excellence. All right, I'll let you guys get on with your show.
Thank you. Moving on. The 2022 Sundance Film Festival wrapped up on Sunday, and we, of course, have resident expert Ms. Drea Clark. And for better or worse, even some of us non-experts got to experience a little bit of Sundance this year from the comfort of our own home. Yeah, this was funny enough, my first Sundance. I haven't done it before. You know, I expected to go in with the me and Timothy Chalamet vehicle Spinners, but, Drea said no that year. So I decided to go as a spectator this year to prep for my ensuing premiere of whatever film I agree to do that has me in it, so... we shall see.
Operators are standing by.
Yeah, operators are standing by. The hint has been dropped.
If he did handle his Sundance experience like many people I know, which is to text me for recommendations and then also just to complain about every single problem they have.
I'm just saying, if you're going to have an awards pass, then the shorts and all the events should be valid up until the award weekend, because now I'm stuck watching 8 films in a 48-hour period and trying to get the shorts in. I'm just saying. And I feel like that wasn't intended.
That's the Sundance experience, Iffy. When you go to Park City, like, believe me, when I used to go as a film festival programmer to look for films at Sundance, and of course I was younger then, I would start at like 8 a.m. and go through to the midnight show. It was not uncommon for me to see 4, 5, 6 movies in a day.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, now I got to step my game up for 2023.
It is the beauty of film festivals. And if you've never experienced one, look regionally, there is one near you.
Indeed.
And most people with their local festivals aren't able, because, you know, lives, jobs, bills, to do them in the fully immersive way that a sort of destination festival is. But if you ever get a chance to, I recommend it, because if you're a movie lover
and you're going, and then it becomes such a badge of honor. Like, it's this daily, oh, how many movies did you see today? Oh, only seven, huh? Well, I started with an 8 a.m. Finnish film, and then I made it to the midnight to see the Korean, whatever. Like, there's something there about just, like, seeing everything around people who are as excited and obsessive and happy to discuss things. This year, of course, biased as ever, very happy with the lineup. I'm not responsible for an enormous amount of it. So congratulations to the whole team. I did have some really great stuff in my section that will be visible soon. We need to talk about Cosby will be coming your way and the Kanye genius. But in terms of the movies that were standouts to me, and I'm interested if any of you caught these, there's two films with Ms. Dakota Johnson who've I've always struggled to connect with as like an accessible performer. I've not like faulted her performances in the past, but she hasn't had that kind of accessible quality that you sometimes need from characters. And I really liked her. She's in both, she stars in both Cha-Cha Real Smooth and in Am I Okay? And did such different work in both of them. Am I Okay? Is from the aforementioned, or I don't know actually if we mentioned it here,
no,
but
that was off.
We were off mic.
Yeah. Tig Notaro and her wife, Stephanie Allen, wrote and directed Am I Okay? And it's this really great film about female friendship and a woman who comes out late in life and all of the sort of turmoil of feeling like an idiot for not coming out till your 30s, especially when you look like Dakota Johnson and presumably pick of any litter. But I found it so heartfelt and such great connection between the two of them. I see a lot of female friendship things where I'm like, well, these two suck. And I don't also believe they're friends. And I thought they didn't suck. And I did believe they're friends.
It's funny. My thing with Am I Okay, which I liked quite a bit also, and I do like Dakota Johnson's performance, is that they establish her relationship, her friendship with Sonoya Mizuno early on. And they're so great together. And then they have a falling out and they spend a good chunk of the movie separately. And I was like, could y'all fix things? Because this movie's better when you're together than when you're not together. But no, I think it's a really strong first film. Tig Notaro gives herself a very funny cameo.
Oh, my God.
As a woman running a hammock retreat. And yeah, it's I look forward to people getting to see this movie. I had a good time with that one.
Yeah, I didn't see that many movies at Sundance, but that was one of the ones that I did see. And of the ones that I saw, I think that was probably my favorite. I really like that it's a film about female friendship. Friendship where it's not just like, yay, friendship, they're gonna be best friends forever, but like it's really about like how this friendship evolves as the people in it evolve, because they've been friends for like a really long time. They do a really good job of setting up not only what the dynamic is between them now, but what it has always been, and then showing you how that needs to change because these characters are also changing and how they're growing together. And yes, yeah, Dakota Johnson is delightful in it, although I have liked her I have found her very accessible since 50 Shades of Grey, where I thought she was the only thing that made me be like, actually, yeah.
Yeah, no, I've been a fan. Actually, there's a if you go back to she has a really fun supporting role in a gay comedy that has undergone several title changes, so now I can never remember what it's actually called. But anyway, find it on her IMDb. She's really fun in that.
Iffy, I know you did get to see some stuff.
Oh yeah, no, it was, yeah. So you know, it was pretty much riding your recommendations, and so I did get to see Cha-Cha Real Smooth, real funny, real hilarious, real good time. But oh my God, Palm Trees and Power Lines. You see, Drea just sent titles. If you've been listening to this show long enough, you can guess if there's a caption. I'm probably not going to read it. I'm just going to hit play and then sit back and, you know, go enjoy the film. Molly is way more squeamish than me when it comes to, like, let's say, tough themes, where I was just more enjoying where it's like, oh, I get the discomfort. We're supposed to live in this so it can drive this point home. Molly was about ready to run out of the house, just to let you know how uncomfortable that movie gets. And the way that it ends, I was like, okay, Drea, next time, this is
I forgot. I gave you a heads up on like Nanny.
Yeah.
But which, I didn't.
Which Nanny I was like hyped about because in the end it extremely be ended up being my type of shit.
It was and so your thing, yeah.
Yeah, so I really fucked with Nanny, but there were lots of fun shorts and the shorts I was fucking with heavy, like Bump was hilarious. It was like and I got to shout out this man specifically because he is of the Nigerian heritage like me, and he's from the UK, and he had. It was called Precious Hair and Beauty. John Ogamuyiwa. Every time I'm trying to pronounce a Nigerian name, I will use a Nigerian accent because it'll help me hit the syllables right. But yeah, it was.
That's why I always say Jansen like that.
This is a film that I just want you to go in blind because he does things that you're not even expecting. And I was like, it was a film that by the end of it, I was like, oh, me and John would get along. Really excited to see what he does next. And then
I'm psyched that you watch shorts, by the way. So many people go to festivals and don't check out the shorts and they're so good.
Yeah, it's so fun, especially the animated shorts, obviously, you know, biased dating an animator. But the Night Bus one was really great and wild. I had fun. And Rachel Sennett in Appendage. That was a fun, freaky one. Who sent it, you know, from Shiva Baby.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, okay. She. So she's back. And that one was one that I wonder if they're going to turn that into a feature because it definitely felt like one of those shorts that are like, y'all like this? Because we'll make it a feature, which, speaking of which, we'll end out on this one, which was a short that turned into a feature, Emergency, which Kerry Williams used to direct my buddy Lamar, a member of the Big Team's sketches when he first came to L.A. So he was really happy for him to see that he went from directing his sketches to now being a Sundance feature director for a phenomenal film that was such a fun watch.
The two movies that I like the most were also actually features that started out as short films. One of them I can't really review because a friend of mine worked on it, but I was very impressed with it all the same, and that was God's Country. With a terrific, terrific lead performance from Tandiwe Newton. It's based on a James Lee Baker short story. She plays a college professor in Montana who gets into a run-in with some local hunters, and it just escalates, and it's just in the bleakest part of winter. It is technically a Christmas movie, I guess, but it is not a Christmas movie. It's like really intense and dark, and I thought it was great. And then a documentary called Framing Agnes from Chase Joint, who co-directed a film from last year I really like called No Ordinary Man. And this one is similar in terms of it is a film that's constantly reminding you that it's a film. They are sort of it's a documentary about things that they don't have footage for. So they're recreating the footage, and then they're also stepping back and showing you that they're recreating the footage, and they'll stop and talk about it while they're doing it. And like the camera will be further back so you can see like the boom guy and, you know, the marks on the floor. And it allows for this sort of conversation about what is it we're doing here? What are we recreating? And it's about this early gender study that happened at UCLA and about various interviewees, you know, who told their stories. And so you have these, you know, trans women and trans men, a trans teenager, you know, in the late 60s who are living their lives and you know, ahead of where the medicine is, you know, and ahead of where society is. And so now you have these contemporary trans figures like Zachary Drucker and Silas Howard and Stephen Ira, you know, who are recreating these interviews with the director, but in the style of like the Mike Wallace interviews, you know. And so suddenly like the screen shrinks down to like old TV size and it's in black and white. And, you know, Jen Richards is in it. It's really smart and really provocative. And I some of these folks I've gotten to know a little bit over the years from Outfest, and some I just follow on Twitter, but like really super smart trans people talking about not just the trans experience, but the history of the trans experience and what the existence of trans people even means and how society can figure out how to accommodate their existence. This movie is just like, I, like Eternals, I wanted it to be longer. I could have listened to all of yes. these people talk for another hour or two because they're also interesting and they bring up such just sort of provocative and fascinating ideas. So I don't think it's gotten picked up yet, but I suspect that it's going to be at Outfest. It's going to be at all the queer film festivals coming up in the spring and summer. So keep an eye out for Framing Agnes.
My guess is not enough people are going to compare Framing Agnes to Eternals. So that is the work Alonzo will do. Angie, did you have any other, like, of your handful that stood out to you?
I watched the Ikiru remake, Living, with Bill Nighy, which I thought was... I have to confess, I still like the original better, but it is a very moving, very touching, very lovely, and it's a lovely movie, but it's also just really lovely to look at with a really remarkable lead performance. So I liked that one. And then there was Fresh, which I'm more mixed on. It was one of the Midnights, starring Sebastian Stan and Daisy Edgar Jones. And I'm not sure if I think the whole thing works, but it's a movie that I think has a really strong visual sense and that I think is doing some very, like, you know, we're just going to go for it kind of thing. So, you know, I don't know if I like the whole thing, but I admire its gutsiness.
Yeah.
And that's coming to Hulu soon.
Yeah. Yes. My last things that I want to shout out are Brian and Charles, which is a Welsh comedy that I hope people see, which also started as a short and became a feature. And it's so absurd and funny. And then documentary Fire of Love about these two volcano experts who fell in love and then perished in volcano in the 90s.
Oh, so they fell in lava.
Oh, no. Yep. Yep. Oh, God. Yep. They fell in lava. Okay. I'm ending it there. Anyway, keep an eye out for all these Sundance things because everything that right now you're like, that sounds great and I'll never be able to see it are the things that a few months from now will get released with very little fanfare or affection on streamers. So please do support, especially like the indie ones that have to make their own way throughout and the year.
That Volcano movie got picked up by National Geographic, so it will most certainly be coming to either Disney Plus or Hulu.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we need to talk about Cosby, which Dre mentioned at the top of the segment, is on Showtime right now. And I will say this. Do not start watching it unless you have all 4 hours to sit and get through it, because I could not stop watching it once I started, and I ended at like 1 o'clock in the morning. But it's riveting.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. You got to be careful. It'll suck you in. Oh, here it comes. Watch out for it. Chew you up. Amazing. The movie's a man-eater. Now it's time for Staff Picks. Even more movies we think you should check out. So, Drea, why don't you start?
This was a recommendation from my friend Ken. A very short 70-minute Japanese film currently available to rent for like $3. It's called Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes. It is the kind of indie film that I adore. It's so smart and so knows its own thing. It's shot to look as if it's all one shot. And the whole premise of it is there's this guy in Tokyo who owns a cafe and he lives in the apartment upstairs. And one night when they're closing up, he discovers that his monitor at his bedroom computer upstairs is 2 minutes behind the one downstairs. So they can see 2 minutes into the future. And it turns into the most clever, it's literally, this sounds like it's not interesting, but it's like 25 minutes of explaining the premise, but it's in real time and it's done in this way that it explains something that's kind of dense and hard to get your head around in a very charming and hilarious manner, because his friends start to come in and they all freak out. And then they're like, ooh, what? Can we win the lottery? Like, they're trying to figure out how to game the system when the only thing they can do is see 2 minutes in the future, which is almost entirely useless. It's just such smart writing. And I love time travel, and it's the smallest amount of time travel, but just it's delightful. Beyond the Infinite 2 minutes.
Yeah. I was going to mention The Worst Person in the World, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago, is part of my top 10 list, which is opening in a select theaters this weekend. But, you know, I didn't want to it's not showing in a lot of cities, and I'm not trying to push people into going back into theater. So I looked up the Dakota Johnson movie that I couldn't remember. It is called Date and Switch. And it also stars Nicholas Braun, who is a bigger deal now than he was when the movie was made because of Zola and Succession.
Cousin Greg.
Yeah, it's a very low-key high school comedy about two best friends, and one of them comes out. So in a way, kind of a cool companion piece to Am I Okay? And you can rent it on Amazon and Apple TV, or you can stream it on Pluto TV. But yeah, it is decidedly minor, but I found it very charming. You might enjoy it. Date and Switch.
Ooh.
And my pick this week is based on the fact that I think we all agree there was not nearly enough Brian Tyree Henry in Eternals. So I'm going to go with the movie The Outside Story, which is this. It's unlike The Eternals. It's very short. It's like 85 minutes. And he is the lead character. And he is just a dude who gets locked out of his apartment in Brooklyn and then just has a whole day of trying to get back into his apartment, and all this other stuff happens. And it's just very small, very lovely. It's also, if you're one of those people like me who just has barely left the house in 2 years, just like a reminder that, like, yes, going outside can be kind of fun, because he plays a character who is very much an inside person, not for pandemic reasons, just because that's how he is. And then the whole movie is about him, because he got locked out of his house, being forced to go outside and interact with people. And there's even a little bit of a romantic storyline. So if you were like, Brian Tyree Henry, not enough to do in Eternals, this is a good movie to get your fill.
Asia Kate Dillon's in that.
Yes.
Oh. Too.
Yeah. Yes. Good call. Good call, Angie.
And, you know, mine is going to be a cheat because, you know, we've hinted at it, we've talked about it, but it was from the moment I had the news that it was going to be dropping so soon that it was already going to be my staff pick, but mine is indeed After Yang. We will be doing an episode, so you should definitely make sure you watch it before we talk about it. And the one little thing I'll say on it, because I feel like, I think you should just go in and enjoy it. But the way I heard it described, and my favorite way I think I heard it described, is if you've heard of cyberpunk, this movie is this new phenomenon called solarpunk, which is a more optimistic view of the future and shows a more kind of like eco-friendly and everything, instead of like the opposite of like dystopian. So I hope we get into more of that. I think I saw like a tweet literally a week before I watched this where it was like, I just want more like slice of life sci-fi films that aren't about like saving the world before it's destroyed. And I think you'll get a nice kind of taste of that.
One could say Beyond the Infinite 2 minutes also fits into a slice of life sci-fi.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's why they call up Drea Clark. You know, she has a red phone that festivals contact her for, and she picks
generally
it up.
Generally to ask me to do stuff for free. That phone rings all the time.
Oh, wow. Angie, thank you so much for being our guest today. Is there anything you'd like to plug before you get out of here?
Not in particular, but if you want to talk at me about any of the stuff that I mentioned, I'm at AJHAN on Twitter, and you can find my TV reviews and some movie reviews at The Hollywood Reporter.
Oh, nice. And if you're mean to her online, I will find you.
Thank you. You're my hero.
Yeah, of course. You know, you know, I can be an angel or a devil. Drea and Alonzo, thank you, as always, for another great show. Being
thank
in my corner.
You.
You know, just there holding me down and holding me back when needed.
And I'll cut your eye if necessary. Also.
If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at @maximum_film. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/maximumfilm, or send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org. Our producer is the wonderful Marissa Flaxbart. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun. Bye-bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.